This is an oral history conducted by Robert Tidwell with Mr. Ned Dew on September the 26th, 2003 at the Vietnam Center interview room via telephone. How are you this morning, Mr. Dew?
Very well, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Dew, to start off, where were you born?
I was born in Garrett, Louisiana.
In 1926.
Okay. Excuse me, July the 14th, 1926.
Okay. What town is Garyville next to?
Garyville is about an hour out of Baton Rouge and about 25 minutes out of New Orleans, right off of I-10.
Okay.
Right along the Mississippi River.
Okay. And what about your parents? Who were your parents?
My parents was Joseph Dewey. My mother was Marie Bickner.
Okay. Were they both from Louisiana?
My dad was from Lutcher, Louisiana, which is only about 10 minutes from here, and my mother was from Reserve, Louisiana, which is 10 minutes south of here, one west and one south of here, yeah.
Okay. And both of them were born in their respective
towns? Yeah, correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what sort of education did your parents have?
My mother was educated in elementary education, I think, before she had, and that was in French mostly.
In French?
The schools at that time were teaching French down here. It's this French country down here, you know, those Cajun people. And my father, I couldn't tell you what kind. He died when I was 3 years old, and I really don't know what kind of education he had.
Okay. So since your father died when you were 3 years of age, did you have any male relatives who kind of took up the role of a father?
Well, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
I had my brother. He was, I guess he was about 15, 16 years older than I was, and he sort of took the part.
Okay. How many siblings did you have?
Who, myself?
Yes.
Four.
Okay. Wow, so five children altogether. Were you the youngest?
Oh, you mean in my mother's family?
Yes. Well, how many siblings did you have?
Oh, no, we had seven in mama's family, yeah.
Okay. And how many brothers and sisters did
you have? I had three brothers and four sisters. Wait a while, it's 1, 2, 3. Yeah, that's correct.
So were you the youngest or the oldest?
I was the youngest, only one living.
Okay. You're the only one who's living?
That's correct, yeah.
Wow.
Out of the family.
That's amazing. So did you grow up in Garyville?
Yes, sir. My whole life.
Okay. Wow. What kind of childhood would you say that you had?
Hell, a happy one.
Okay. That will work.
Hey, you know, it was depression time, but... Hey, nobody had too much, but we were all happy.
Okay. Well, especially since you had so many brothers and sisters, you had a pretty good support team there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very well. Very well supported.
So did you get along well with your brothers and sisters?
Sure did.
So what kind of things did you all do when you were kids?
As young people, we did a lot of played a lot of baseball, basketball, football. We did a lot of hunting and fishing.
Oh, what did you hunt?
Mostly rabbits and birds, like you know, doves and snipes and stuff like that, and mostly rabbits.
Okay. And what kind of fishing did you do?
Fishing, we just fish off the you know, ponds around the Mississippi River or. Some of the bayous around here, you know.
Oh, did you?
It was just mostly, at that time, we didn't have rod and reels. They were just mostly cane reed, you know. We used a cane reed pole and just a regular line, made our own lines, you know. We didn't, it's not like it is today where everybody's got these rod and reels and stuff. We didn't have such things.
Oh, so did you make your own poles as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, we cut the cane reed poles, yeah. We get the cane reed poles out the woods, and we, you know, we make our own fishing lines. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty ingenious.
Buy a stopper, buy a sinker, and buy a sink and a stopper, and you string and you made your own line.
Well, that must have helped a little bit in terms of food.
Hey, we ate a lot of fish, I guarantee you.
Did you ever have it fried on Friday night? Or?
Well, we'd fry fish any time we had it. It didn't have to be fried the night, you know. We had just any time.
Okay.
You know, and I had a brother, my oldest brother, that, like I was telling you, he did a lot of hunting in the swamps. He hunted deer and hell, caught frogs, and he was an avid hunter, you know. He just loved to hunt and fish. He was, till the day he died, in fact, he was like that. His whole life, he worked at an oil plant, and all his spare time was hunting and fishing.
So it was more than just a hobby with him.
Huh?
So it was more than just a hobby with him.
Oh, yeah. He.
Okay. So did you and your siblings work when you were children? Did you have any kind of part-time job or after-school job?
Yeah, I did. I worked just about all through high school. I worked in a grocery store, a company store in Missouri, Louisiana.
Okay.
I worked my whole high school career through there. I was a young boy, heck, probably 12, 13 years old when I started there, and I just worked all the way through the store, yeah, all through high school until I graduated.
Did you say that was a company store?
Yeah, it was what they call a company store. It was Gotcho Sugars in Missouri, Louisiana, and they used to call this store the company store. Everybody, you know, it was a store that just had everything. It had, we had hardware, we had a ballroom in there, we had meat market, we had clothes, just about anything you wanted. It would be considered a Walmart of today.
Okay.
But not quite the size, you know what I mean? But they had everything that person needed.
Okay. So so did you just do this job on the weekends or after school?
After school, I'd get off, I think at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. My last 2 hours would like phys ed and study hall in the principal let me go to work, yeah.
Okay. And then you'd work until about what time?
Oh, I guess 7:30 at night, yeah. And we'd work all day on Saturdays, and during the cane grinding season, we'd work a half a day on Sundays.
Okay, so there must have been a sugar mill nearby. Where you
one of the biggest, yeah, Gotcho Sugars.
Okay. Ah, good cane sugar, too. And did any of your siblings ever work for the sugar mill?
Well, one of my brothers at one time did work a few years there, but he didn't stay there very long. He went elsewhere. But I'd say he worked there a couple of years. One of my brothers did, but the rest of them, two of them worked in oil refinery at Norco, Louisiana, with Shell Oil. And the one that worked at the sugar mill, he ended up being an insurance salesman.
Okay. How many of your siblings still? Well, when they were alive, how many of them still lived in the Garyville area?
They all just about lived around here.
Okay.
You know, I think the furthest away was probably 5 or 6 miles. We all lived in the same area, more or less in the same parish or county, as you all would say.
So I gather you were a pretty close family then.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Did you get into a lot of activities together? As a family or as a group of siblings?
Well, really, you know, did a lot of fish fries and played a lot of ball together, you know, baseball and stuff like that. Like hunting together, we'd hunt, you know, and fish together. But that was about it, I guess. That was about it.
Well, as far as playing ball, you had about enough people for your own team, just in your own family there.
Yeah, when I say play ball, they were a little older than me. They played with a different group, but we all, you know, that was one of our part-time hobbies, you know, playing ball. We all love sports.
Okay. So which of the sports was your favorite?
I'd say baseball.
The great American pastime.
Yep.
So which position did you usually like to play?
Oh, I did a little third base. I played a little bit. I caught a little bit. Mostly third base.
Okay.
That was my position, yeah.
Okay. So what sort of education did you have before you went into the Navy?
High school education, as far as I went.
Okay.
Joined the Navy at 17.
Oh, okay. So did you? So you basically joined right after you graduated then?
A few months after, yeah. I couldn't get my mother permission. She wouldn't sign, you know.
Wow.
Didn't want me to go.
Okay. Well, what changed her mind?
Well, I just told her I didn't want to go in the Army, that I wanted to go in the Navy.
Okay. So it took a little bit of salesmanship on your part then.
Yeah, we had to. Yeah. She didn't. Well, she had two kids, had two boys in there already. You know.
Okay. What branch of service were they in?
One was in the Navy, and the other was in the Army.
Okay.
He served in Texas. One of them, I think, at one of the bases in Texas, and the other one in the Navy. He spent 4 years on the USS Ryan.
What kind of ship was that?
A destroyer.
Okay. So,
that was the 404.
Okay. So, are you married yourself?
Yeah, sure am.
Now, how many children do you have?
Four.
Okay. What's the mixture of boys and girls?
Two boys and two girls.
And do any of them live in Louisiana or?
Hell, they're all right around here. Every one of them, just right in the area. We're not. I guess the furthest one is 12 minutes from here.
Well, that's a short drive.
But in fact, we got a grocery store up here in Garrettville. My son, my oldest son, has. He owns a grocery store here in Garrettville. And we have one. My oldest son owns the store, and I have a son and a daughter that works in the store with us, and plus myself.
Okay.
I'm still working.
Oh,
In fact, I just left the store.
Okay. So you're only semi-retired then?
I would say that, yeah. I'm retired, but, you know, I'm doing what I like to do.
Okay. So what did you do before you retired?
I worked in the grocery store my whole life. I worked at the company store I told you about. I worked there about 21, 22 years, and then after I left the company store, it was an old building, an old store, and they decided to shut the patio shut down and reserved, the sugar mill did. And they shut the store down, so I went and worked with a little supermarket in Reserve, and I stayed there about 21, 22 years. So that's all I ever did in my life was grocery work. Well, when I say grocery, mostly in the meat department, you know.
Okay. Oh, so did you actually do any meat cutting?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I still do. Yeah.
Okay.
And in fact, that's what I they would call us a butcher.
Okay. Okay. Well, you don't see too many genuine butchers anymore.
Well, I wasn't a guy that went out there and killed and skinned those cows and everything else. We just mostly, you know, we get our meat through a meat wholesale and it's all done. You know, all we have to do is cut it. And, you know, it's all boxed and everything today. It's all a little different than it was. We used to cut meat by hand a long time ago. You had a saw and a cleaver and a knife. Today we have a meat saw, and it's so much easier. It's all together different.
I think it would take a lot less time to.
Oh yeah,
to make your cuts.
A hell of a lot less work and a lot less time and a lot less work, not as hard.
Okay. So you were 17 when you decided to go into the Navy.
Right.
What made you think about the Navy?
Well, I guess my brother one of my brother right before me had been in there a while, and I just wanted to go in the Navy. I just didn't want to get in the Army. And I just rather be in the Navy, I guess.
Okay. So before you entered, did you have any thought about going into the military at all? I mean, was it something you thought about for a fairly long time?
Well, the war was still on, you know, and we were probably in the middle of the war, and you sooner or later you were going to go in. And, you know, rather than get drafted, hell, a lot of young people did the same thing. They just signed up and, you know, went in the branch of service they chose, you know. If you got drafted, 9 chances out of 10, you ended up in the Army.
Okay.
And you know, so most of the young kids that I grew up with and finished school with, a lot of them went in the Navy. Some of them in the Army, but after I got in the Navy, I talked to a few of them into joining the Navy, you know, right to them and tell them, hey, look, man, join the Navy.
Oh, so you were a Navy booster then?
Yeah, I guess you can say that.
Maybe they should have given you a little extra in your pay packet for recruiting. So you actually had some of your friends who had gone into the Navy. Did y'all discuss this before you made your final decision? Was it something that y'all had talked about?
Well, no. I finished school in 43, and some of these guys just didn't finish till 44. And I just, you know, they were good buddies of mine, and I just write them a letter. We keep in touch, you know, and I'd write them and say, look, man, you'd rather go into service, go in the Navy. And I had several of them did that, you know. One of them served aboard the USS Wichita, which was a cruiser. And I don't know what the other kid served, Norman. He was in the Pacific with me. I think he was on a big one of these supply ships or something. But he was out there with me. And we still talk about that. He still sometimes gets on me about getting in, joining the Navy. I don't know if he didn't like the Navy or what, but he still sometimes, when I run across him, he says, yeah, he said, you got me to join the Navy. I said, well, you know, I just thought I was doing you a favor.
So,
but it was just in jest. They were all in fun, you know. I mean, he didn't. He was glad he went in. He's still. Well, he's not in Gatlin anymore. This guy I'm talking about. He's living in New Orleans now.
Okay, that's not too far away, is it?
No.
Okay. So you'd mentioned earlier that your mother didn't take the news very well. How did the rest of your family take it whenever you told them that you wanted to go into the Navy?
They didn't like it too much, but they really didn't have any choice, you know, because, I mean, sooner or later you were gone, and you might as well be in a branch of service you wanted to be in. That's the way I looked at it, you know. And, you know, in those days, all the young kids, when they got out of school, they just, some of them, in fact, quit school to join, you know. Several of my classmates quit school to join, you know. Well, I didn't want to do that. I figured, hey. And when they got out of service, they went back and got through the GI Bill, they got their high school education, you know. But I didn't want to quit school to join. In fact, I was too young anyway.
Oh, sure.
You know, when I graduated from high school, I was 16 years old.
Okay.
So I was too young to go if I wanted, unless I'd lie on my application, you know, and then I still have to get my mother's signature, and she wouldn't have signed, so I just waited till I got old enough and went in.
So when you decided to go into the Navy, did you tell your older brother who was in the Navy?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. He knew I was going in.
Okay. And did he kind of pat you on the back and
say
welcome?
He thought it was a wise decision.
Okay. So where did you go for your physical and all of that?
Physical was at the Customs House in New Orleans on the foot of Canal Street in New Orleans. And after I got accepted, I went to boot camp in San Diego, California. Spent 6 weeks there, and came down to Cooks and Baker School up in Corpus Christi, Texas. Spent 4 months there.
Okay.
And from there, we were shipped to Norfolk, Virginia, to be assigned a ship, and that's where I was assigned to the Evans. Out of a pool of men that were, you know, that were at Norfolk, Virginia, we were assigned to. The ship's crew was formed in Norfolk. The whole crew.
So where did you go when you actually signed your enlistment papers? Did you do that in Garyville or did
No,
you...
that was done at the Customs House.
Okay.
In New Orleans, yeah, at the Customs House.
Okay. So did you make your enlistment and get your physical all in one day?
It was signed, yeah, and they gave, I think, like 10 days to get my stuff together. I think that was like May the 1st, and by May the 10th I was gone on my way to California.
Well, you'd mentioned earlier that your mother had, when she went to school, it was taught almost entirely in French.
Yeah, her school is strictly French, yeah.
So did you grow up speaking French and English?
I can hold a conversation in French pretty good, yeah. Not as good as I should, but I can get by. And as far as understanding French, I understand it 100%,
And
I can read French, you know, to a certain extent. But talking, I'm not that good at speaking it, but... you know, I can if I ran across a Frenchman, I can get by.
Ah, très bien.
Yeah, très bien, right. It helps.
So, when you went to San Diego, was that the furthest you'd ever been outside of Garyville?
It sure was, I guarantee you.
So
that was a long ride.
So, but before you had gone to San Diego, was New Orleans about the largest?
No,
town
I spent spent a few summers in. Not some of the few weeks at along the Gulf Coast in Mississippi. My sister and them had a family that they were, she was in a family from New Orleans that owned a little house in Waveland, Mississippi, and Bay St. Louis around there, and spent, you know, we'd go spend a week there every now and then.
Okay.
I said, we are mostly myself.
Okay.
With them, you know.
So San Diego, was that the biggest city you'd seen up to that point?
If it was bigger than New Orleans, it was.
Okay.
I don't really know the size of New Orleans and San Diego at the time, but yeah, I'd been in New Orleans. You know, I was familiar with New Orleans. I was only 25 minutes out of there, and as a young man, we took a lot of trips to New Orleans.
Okay. So what were your first thoughts when you arrived in San Diego?
Man, what the hell did I get myself into here?
So did they say
these guys? You're getting out of the bus, and these guys holler, "You'll be sorry," and stuff like that. You know, that was. What did I get into here? But it wasn't. It really wasn't that bad, really. It was all right.
So you said you got off the bus. So
yeah.
You obviously took a bus trip. How long did that?
Well, the bus trip was from the train station to the base.
Okay, I was about to say a bus trip from Louisiana to California.
No, the bus trip. We went by train, by Southern Pacific Railroad. We caught it out of New Orleans, crossed the Mississippi River, went through Houston and all through Texas, and then to New Mexico, Arizona, and San Diego. And then, you know, when we got to San Diego, they transported us from the station to the base in a Navy bus, I guess.
So, what was it like on that train trip?
We had a bunch of boy Louisianans on there, so we had a good time. We were enjoying ourselves. We didn't, you know, we didn't know we didn't know what we were getting into and what we'd expect. So we just made the best of everything. But we had a bunch of boys from New Orleans on that were going in, and we had a bunch we picked up in Lafayette, Louisiana. So we had a bunch of Louisiana boys that were in the same company.
That must have made the trip a little bit easier then, because you had a bunch of people from the same state. You know?
Oh yeah, we had a good time. Yeah, it didn't. You know, we just resigned. We were going into service, and that was it. You know, heck, everybody here. You had 11 million people in the service in World War II, so we were just one of them.
And then you said when you got off the bus, a bunch of guys were teasing you about.
that was a slang in them days. You know, you'd be sorry. You know. You know, we're a bunch of boots, recruits, you know, and them guys had probably been in the Navy a while, and that was funny. They'd be shouting that at you. You'll be sorry. And, you know, kind of made you say, what the hell are we getting into here? But it wasn't bad, really. It was, you just picked up a lot of discipline.
So how long was your boot camp?
6 weeks. At that time, that was about, there used to be, I remember they used to be 12 weeks or 16 weeks, and then as the war progressed, they just cut that boot camp down shorter and shorter. We got it in 6 weeks, and I think that was about the shortest they had at the time.
They were
producing, putting out a lot of ships, and they needed men to get on them, but they just cut that boot camp period down.
So what was it like in boot camp?
What it was like, up at 5, And trained all day, didn't, you know, you just didn't have all energy. In fact, you didn't have any time for yourself. And at 9 o'clock, you were in a bunk, going to sleep, and glad to be in that bunk. You were tired, and that was it. From tops to rugby, we just it kept us on the go. It's every, you know, training and different classes and. Hell, even I couldn't swim when I joined the Navy. Funny to believe, from Louisiana, I couldn't swim. But I learned how real quick. They threw you off on the deep end of the pool, and you better learn how to swim, brother. And what gave you incentive to learn how was, hey, if you can't swim when boot camp is over, you don't get a boot leave. In other words, you don't get to go home, you know. Well, I guarantee you, I learned how to swim right quick. It didn't take me long.
Well, that was plenty of motivation. First, they dump you into the pool, and then tell you if you don't swim, you can't
well,
visit home.
and you'd be surprised at kids that couldn't swim. You know, you'd think everybody'd learn how to swim by the time they were that age. But you'd be surprised at kids that really didn't know how to swim. In fact, I took swimming lessons from a chaplain. A chaplain that gave us swimming lessons. We'd go like an hour every day or so, and they'd give me a swimming lesson. It didn't take long, I guarantee you.
So what kind of classes did they send you to when you were in San Diego? You said you spent a lot of time.
Well, mostly, they teach you about identification of ships and stuff like that, you know, and just some little bit gunnery, not much, because you learn that later when you got ready to go aboard ship there. We had a pretty good training period before we went on the ship. We trained as a crew together, but they were just mostly drilling and training. I guess discipline more than anything else they were teaching you, you know.
Okay.
And but ship identification. What I'm trying to think of now, maybe a few, we familiarize ourselves with a few of the Navy guns, you know. And then little, you know, how to shoot a pistol, how to shoot a rifle. They taught stuff like that.
Okay.
But not too much. Huh? You just mostly stayed on what they call a grind out there all day long and drilled.
And then, as you said, by the end of the day, you were happy to be in your bunk.
Oh yeah, they wouldn't let you go to, you wouldn't get in the bunk till 9 o'clock. You know, after you finish your day's work, you still had stuff for you to do, and you had to clean the latrines and San Diego was a real beautiful naval station, and they were clean, and boy, they thought cleanliness. That's one thing they stressed, and I guess. You know, they knew you were going to live aboard ship, and you had to stress cleanliness, you know, because you get 360 people on a ship and packed up like we were on a destroyer, and that was one of the things the Navy taught, cleanliness.
Okay. So did you ever have any incidents that stand out in your mind, anything that may have been humorous or maybe not humorous during your
boot
time
training?
Boot camp?
Not really.
Okay.
The funniest thing I guess happened was we had that bunch of Frenchmen in there from around Brule Bridge in Lafayette, Louisiana. And most of those guys, they spoke French as well as they spoke English, you know. And at night after the lights would go out, you're supposed to be, and they'd start rallying there off that French. And a lot of these guys, we had a bunch from Texas and Mississippi in that company also, and a few from Arkansas, and they didn't know what the hell was going on with that French talk, and I was pretty well off. I understood everything was going on, you know, and they would just rattle off that French after dark and just amongst themselves, you know, and loud enough for everybody, but nobody knew what they were saying, but that was pretty funny, you know.
Well, as you said, you're so tired by the end of the day, and no one had the energy for mischief.
No. Hey, you know, they'd check on you. They'd come in there and check on you. Make sure you were sleeping. In fact, you didn't have any trouble going to sleep, I guarantee you. You had a little trouble getting up in the morning. That was a short night. But it went by. That 6 weeks flew by, I guarantee you.
Well, especially when you pack that much activity into such a
short period. I think after 3 or 4 weeks they gave us a day off. I think they let us go ashore, you know, let us go into town. But
so what do you do when you went into San Diego itself?
Hey, just went sightseeing. Just, you know, just a young kid didn't know where he was anyway. Just had to make sure you didn't get lost, I guess. but we just mostly sightseeing.
Okay. So what kind of, how would you describe your living conditions in boot camp? Were the barracks pretty decent?
Oh, yeah. They were very clean, first class. San Diego, the nights were real, the days were pretty warm. But, you know, when I say warm, you stood out there all day long and you got sunburn. Between the wind and the sun, you got sunburn, but windburn. But at night, the nights were real cool and I guarantee you, all the windows in the barracks, I think we had 80 men in each wing, you know. I think we had 160 people in our company, and we had 80 in one wing and 8 in the other. And, you know, the windows, the the windows had to stay open all night. So you got those two Navy blankets, you covered up pretty good at night because it was pretty cool.
Especially with that sea breeze coming in.
Yeah, it was very nice, was beautiful over there. In fact, we visited San Diego a few years back, one of our reunions. And, you know, it brought back memories, but so much has changed that you really didn't, you know, you didn't recognize. Just like when we had a reunion in Corpus Christi, Texas a few years back, too, maybe seven, eight, 9 years ago. And I spent 4 months there, and when I got to Corpus Christi, I was just plumb lost. I didn't know. You know, it was nothing like it was when I was there.
So when
it's completely changed.
So when you were in boot camp, did you have any idea of what you wanted to do in the Navy?
Not really, no. Okay. No, I didn't know what I was going to do. They gave you a few tests, and but you know, you didn't exactly know what you were going to do or what you were. I had a choice towards in a boot camp. They you know, they were assigning you somewhere, and I had a choice of either going to a amphibious school, and that would have been off around Coronado. I think we had an amphibious school there. I would have gone there, or I could have gone to Cooks and Baker School at Corpus Christi.
Okay.
So I at first I thought about amphibious, and I got to thinking. I said, no, I don't think I want to go on the amphibious forces. So I said, let me go to school at Corpus Christi. So I spent 4 months down there at Cooks and Baker School.
Well, that in Corpus Christi is a lot closer to Louisiana. Than
yeah, well, that's yeah, that I had to admit. And you know, a lot of fellas got boot leave after 6 weeks for some reason or other. I don't know why. I don't know if anybody in our company got it, but I know I didn't get any boot leave. So they shipped me straight to Corpus Christi. Maybe I had to do something with the beginning of the school, you know. But I got shipped right straight without a boot leave. In other words, when I went in service, I didn't get out till 2 years later when I got my first leave. In other words, I stayed in there 2 years before I got a leave. And so I didn't see my folks for 2 years. A lot of kids, you know, got boot leave. Some of them got stationed where they could get to their homes and stuff. But for some reason or other, every time I got ready to ask for leave, we were about to go somewhere, you know. I said, sorry, you ain't got but 3 or 4 days. Can you make it home in 3 or 4 days? Hell no, man. You can't catch a plane like in Virginia. I couldn't catch a train in Virginia and get to New Orleans and back in 3 or 4 days.
No way.
And those, and you couldn't fly in those days. They didn't have that much, you know, very little flying, and they probably didn't have the money to fly anyway, you know.
Yeah, this is a lot more expensive.
So I just had to say, well, I just had to pass it up. They offered me 3 or 4 days, and I'd go. I went to see the chaplain one time. I said, man, I need a leave. I said, I haven't been home since, you know. I said, they didn't give me a leave at boot camp. He said, say, Elise, I'm looking for a leave myself. He said, I'm trying to get him on it. He told me that. I said, well, then he's worrying about it. So we just stayed in until after the war. We got back to the States, and I had 60 days coming. I had 2 months for 2 years, you know, 30 days a year, and they gave me 20 days. So I came home for 20 days, and I went back, did 40, and came and got discharged.
20 days at home must have been quite a bit of rest for you.
Oh, yeah, that was nice. We really were. But then a lot of the guys had been out discharged out of the service. I got to see all my friends again, you know. But
and see how much it changed since you had left.
Yeah.
So you went to Cooks and Baker School, and how long again was that?
That's 4 months.
4 months.
Spent 4 months, yeah.
So what kind of things did you do in Cooks and Baker School?
We did a little class. We had a little classroom work, and I think 1 or 2 days a week, and the other 3 days you spent in the galley learning to do by doing, you know.
Okay.
You know, working with the cooks in the galley, and you'd learn from there. And it was pretty interesting.
So I guess in that 4 months they taught you how to cook a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We had a pretty good background of what was going on, yeah.
So they taught you how to cook more than just you know, opening some things out of a tin.
Oh, yeah, we didn't. Yeah, you bet. Yeah, we had a big old cookbook of the size of a Bible, man, a big old book. And, you know, you had recipes in there. You can cook out of there. And if you had your own recipes, I guess you could use your imagination and cook. But I ended up being a getting a third class rating, you know, before I got out of the Navy. I got to make third class, so that wasn't too bad.
Okay.
But I ran, you know, a watch on the ship, you know. One watch. So it wasn't bad.
So you said they would allow you to use your own recipes if you wanted to. So
aboard ship, yeah, we deviated and we just, you know.
So did you ever get to make any gumbo while you're on ship?
No, I didn't. I sure didn't. I wouldn't have went that far because you sort of had a, you had a thing you went by and that was it. And but no, I didn't make any gumbo.
Well, besides a doubt on board ship, you would have had any ground sassafras to make the roux anyway.
No, we wouldn't have. We had flour and grease. We could have made the roux. Yeah, we could have made the roux. But hey, if we'd have given them guys gumbo, they wouldn't know what to do with it anyway. we cook rice or something one time, and they were I forget what we had cooked rice for. Every now and then we cook rice. We cooked it one time, and them guys were putting pet milk and sugar in it and making a pudding out of it. But that wasn't the purpose of the rice. But they just, you know, in the Navy, you use a lot of potatoes. It's not like down here. We use rice down here. Over there, it's potatoes. Up north and everything, the people, they're potato eaters. Down here, we eat rice. We like Chinamen, man. We eat rice two or three times a day sometimes. But we use a lot of rice down here.
Well, in fact, make sausage out of it. Make some good boudin.
Yeah, that's right. They do. We got a place right here down in fact, only 4 miles from here that makes boudin, white boudin, Veyron's provision. We get white boudin with them.
So overall, how would you rate your time in boot camp in Cooks and Baker School? Would you say it was a good experience?
Oh yeah. I had a real good time in Corpus Christi. Corpus Christi was a fine place. That was a big naval air station down there, you know. And between, I think, them and Pensacola were the two biggest stations in the United States at the time.
Yes, indeed.
And they had all these auxiliary fields down there around Beesville and Brownsville and all that. They had these auxiliary fields. And that was a pretty big station. And we had a good time. It well treated, you know. It wasn't almost like being at home, I can say. You know, we were well treated down there.
So then you would say that, or would you say that the time that you spent in boot camp and then in the Cooks and Baker School prepared you for life aboard ship?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, plus we had, like I said, we had more training after that. You know, we had training in Norfolk. We trained as a whole crew, and the crew was assembled in Norfolk, and we trained as a crew. The cooks worked in the galley at Norfolk, you know, with the base, and we also went aboard a training ship in Chesapeake Bay. I forget what destroyed, whether it was destroyed, just like we were on, something class destroyer, and we spent a week on it, just learning, you know, life at sea, I guess. Every morning, we wouldn't sleep aboard, but every morning they'd take a bus and bring us to the ship, and we'd spend all day. At night, we'd get back to base, and we trained as a crew on another destroyer. I guess they had a skeleton crew on that destroyer, and the whole crew was trained on this destroyer here, you see.
Okay. Well, you'd mentioned a couple of times that you learned a lot of discipline in boot camp. How did your instructors enforce that discipline?
I tell you the truth, I just plumb scared of them anyway. They didn't have to enforce it on me. I wouldn't step out of line, I guarantee you. They never had a chance to, you know. I never got in any trouble, I guarantee you. Because I went by the book. Because I just figured, hey, these guys are, you know, they come on pretty. They weren't that tough, but they came on pretty tough. And after you graduated, it was a whole different story, you know. But really, they came on like they were mean as hell. They were really down to earth people.
And you respected that.
You bet.
So it was after, was it during the near the end of your Cooks and Baker School, or was that the end of it that you learned that you were being assigned to a ship?
No, no, not really. We were assigned to the naval base at base in Norfolk, Virginia. And, well, from there we figured we'd be assigned to a ship, yeah. But it, we went down there, I think it was at the end of October.
Okay.
And, let's see, yeah, and then we arrived there on a Sunday night in October, the end of October, and we stayed there. We didn't get assigned that ship till December sometimes.
Okay.
Because we just did our jobs over there. We'd be in the barracks, and every day they'd give you a work detail. I worked in a grocery store. I cut grass at an admiral's house. We just had different, just everything, you know. I stood watching the machine shops over there, and just every day you had something different to do. And, you know, they just kept you busy. And every morning you'd go out to this big yard or whatever you want to call it, I don't know what it was, this big area, and they had a big chalkboard up there, you know. And when I got assigned, my name was up there, and it said the USS Frankie Evans, you know. And that's when, you know, I got assigned, and we just... They pulled us all out, and they put us all in a barracks by ourselves, you know, but our whole crew was in one barracks, you know.
Okay.
Well, one or two barracks, I don't know how many barracks. And I say the whole crew, I guess most of the crew was. I don't think we had all 365 of us there, but we had most of us there, and we slept together and worked together and we trained together, and that's when we went to gunnery school from there. We went to, like I said, we spent a week aboard this destroyer, get little sea legs on or something, I don't know. But anyway, we went to a lot of gunnery school from there.
Oh, so you actually had an opportunity to go to gunnery school.
Well, what happened, you see on a destroyer, you don't have one job. You know, you whatever you are, when general quarters sound, you had a battle station. And mine
okay.
I was a load on a 20 millimeter.
Okay. Oh, so you
just didn't learn load. You had to learn to shoot the gun and everything. So we were trained like that. We went over to some of these in the Virginia area there, off maybe 20, 30 miles out in the country from Norfolk, and there was these it was over water, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but they'd have a whole bunch of guns out there, and 20s mostly where I was, because that's what I was training to be on a 20 millimeter, and they'd pull these sleeves over with a plane, or they'd send these little drone planes over, and you'd chew at them all day long, and you know, and that was the kind of training I got, you know, on a gun. We were pretty well trained, I guarantee you. When you left there, you knew what the gun was all about, you know, and you know every 20 millimeter you had three people, you had a range setter, a gunner and a loader, and we had three guns on the fantail of the ship where I was, and we had 10 people. We had three on each gun plus our gun captain, who was the gunner's mate third class, and you know that's where we were in battle stations on the ship, you know.
Okay. So did you have drills as well?
All the time. Hey, just on our way over to the Pacific, every time you turned around, there was get close to land, there was some plane dragging a sleeve over the ship, and you were shooting at it, not just the 20s, but the 5-inch guns, the 40 millimeters, and they learned to drop depth charges, the depth charge crew, and then you had your torpedoes, they'd fire torpedoes, and you went through the whole work, you know, really, you were well trained, I guarantee you. They didn't spend all that money on that ship for nothing. They had a well-trained crew.
So you said that you were able to do several different kinds of jobs before you actually went onto the ship, or before you were assigned the ship.
Yeah.
So they kept you pretty busy then.
Oh yeah, there was always had something to do. I guarantee you, there was no laying around in barracks. There was no such thing as that.
So. Did you ever get any leave to go into Norfolk?
Oh yeah, we went to Norfolk, Newport News. We'd go in, you know, anytime you wanted to go. You had liberty at night, you know. whenever you wanted to go. I think every other night they allowed you to live at the time.
So what kind of things did you do on Liberty?
On Liberty, we'd go to movies, go drink a few beers maybe, and a lot of sightseeing and whatever. Go to church sometimes. Just whatever time you had, you just...
Made the most of it.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you have an opportunity to go anything like a USO program or anything?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, not in Norfolk, I didn't, but in New York, when we were in New York, I went to a couple of USOs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so you were in New York. What were you doing in New York?
Well, that's where the ship was commissioned. The ship was built at Staten Island and was commissioned in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, so we spent... Let's see, I guess we spent probably a month or so before we went on Shakedown Cruise, Shakedown Cruise in Cuba off of Guantanamo Bay. And then, like I said, we had Liberty. In fact, I was a cook, and I had Liberty every night. After I finished my duty in the daytime, I could go ashore every night, but mostly the ship's crew had it starboard and port side one night, starboard side the other night.
Okay.
But cook side, for some reason or other, we had more privileges on that. they, I don't know why, but they, I guess maybe we put in more hours than some people. But
maybe they were trying to keep happy the guys who made the food.
Maybe so. But we got to go on Liberty. If you had money, you went on Liberty. You know, sometimes you were broke, you didn't go. But I went to a couple of USOs in New York, yeah.
Okay. So you were a plank owner then for the Evans?
Yeah, sure was. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you were aboard Evans, how long did it take before you and the rest of the crew were told that the ship was going to the Pacific?
Well, when we got off a Shakedown cruise, we went back to the Brooklyn Navy Yard for a checkup or whatever, you know, make sure everything was under control. And from there, we figured we were going, and it was around the middle of April or so, we headed for the Pacific. Maybe before, I don't exactly remember when, but. We left Brooklyn in April, and I know we went to Norfolk. We stopped off at Norfolk, and then I think we might have gone to Cuba, I believe, and then picked up a cruise or two, and we went through the canal, and from there we headed to Pacific, you know.
Okay. So when you discovered that you were going to the Pacific, what was your first reaction?
Well, we sort of, I guess most of the guys, you know, they wanted to go. Hell, that's what they were. They want to. This destroyer we were on was quite a ship, and I guess we were just, you know, we were trained for that, and I guess we were just ready.
Okay, and what about your parents? Whenever you told them,
Tell them too much, really. Okay. My mother, you know, she was home by herself at that time. All the boys, like I said. A couple of them went to service. The oldest boy had gotten married, and the sisters were my two sisters. One was in Houston, Texas, and she was a nurse. She was in Houston, and the other sister was in New Orleans. So I never did tell them too much. I never did tell them anything. Let them worry.
Okay. So when you were in boot camp, and then when you went to your additional training, such as the Cooks and Bakers School, and then when you went to Norfolk, did you stay in touch with your family and your friends?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Always wrote. Yeah, I had different people I'd write to all the time, you know. And yeah, we wrote regularly.
Okay. Did you ever hear from your brother who was in the Navy?
Oh, yeah. In fact, we were talking about Norfolk. When I was in Norfolk waiting to be assigned, his ship pulled into Norfolk one day, and we went out and had myself and a boy from Bonanza, Arkansas. My brother went out and drank a few beers. He came aboard he came on the base and looked me up. I didn't even know he was in, you know. And he knew I was in Norfolk because we used to write to each other. And he knew I was in Norfolk waiting to be assigned. And he came over there and looked this up. And I didn't have Liberty that night, but I got permission from one of the officers, the officer of the day. And he let me go ashore with him. And we went out and drank a few beers and spent a night together. That was nice. In fact, I even went to visit a ship he was on, the Ryan, USS Ryan, the 404. And he brought us aboard the ship and went visit, you know. We had never really been on a destroyer too much, you know, and we didn't know too much about it. And that was a small destroyer. That was one of the oldest ones, I guess, the Navy had in action at that time.
Okay. Oh, was it a four-stacker?
No, it wasn't a four-stack. It wasn't that old, but it was it saw quite a bit of action. In fact, they got hit. I think it was off Sicily. They got hit by a couple of bombs. They didn't do too much damage. I guess most of the shrapnel hit or something. But he spent 4 years. That boy spent 4 years on that ship. He was a machinist mate.
Okay. So. So the two of you were actually able to spend some time together,
yeah,
also get to know what the other was doing,
yeah,
in the Navy.
Yeah, we kind of, I always wrote to him and he wrote back. We kept in touch, you know.
Okay.
We kept in touch with each other.
So how was the shakedown cruise?
It was quite an experience. It was worked real hard, done a lot of training, and everything went smooth. Though we had a wonderful ship, man. It was a great ship.
So what was the daily routine on the shakedown cruise?
Like I say, I was the ship's cook, so I got to cook. What I did, I'd go on at 12 o'clock in the daytime, and we'd cook supper that night in my ship. And then we'd wake up early the next morning, cook breakfast and dinner, and we were off. After the next 3 meals, we were off. You see, we had two crews, you know, two different stuff. So we worked, we worked a day and we were off a day. But in between that, I mean, we had all these training exercises, general quarters, and, you know, did a lot of gunnery training, you know. In fact, we even went ashore one day and practiced. I don't know what island, one of the little islands out there. We ended up practicing shooting 20 millimeters all that day. But it was pretty good. It was kept us quite busy. They had to find out what the ship was going to do, and I guess they found out what it could do.
Well, you said that earlier that on the shakedown cruise you had sailed to Cuba. Did you have any opportunity to go ashore in Cuba?
No, we never got liberty. No, sir. The only time we went ashore one time, like I said, I recall went on one of the little islands around there somewhere where the Navy had a gunnery range, and we spent a day, I can't remember if it was 1 day or 2 days, but we did spend a day out there. They even gave us a little box lunch. We had a little box lunch, and this was the gun crew, you know. And we spent a day out there shooting those 20s all day long. But we never got liberty off in Cuba, no. In fact, we got very little liberty. You know, we got liberty in the States. But even after we left, we had liberty at the canal zone, you know. But in Hawaii, when we got to Hawaii, we had liberty. And then I think once after that, we stopped at Guam. They gave us a day off. We went to the island. In fact, we played a baseball game against another ship. But after that, boy, it was no liberty at all after we got in the Pacific. That was it.
So after the shakedown cruise, you returned to New York.
New York for what they call it, outfitting or whatever, okay. You know, and then stayed there a little while and went to Norfolk, went back to Guantanamo. I don't know what we went to do, but I can't remember. But anyway, and then we went through the canal and right to Pearl Harbor, you know.
Okay, so you got to see, you at least had an opportunity to see the Panama Canal.
Oh yeah, that was quite an experience, I guarantee you. You can't describe it, especially from the deck of a destroyer. You couldn't. There's no way. And they had at the same time we were going through, there was an aircraft carrier going through, and I'm still trying to figure out how they got that thing through the canal.
It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, you bet. It was quite. And then you get quite a few miles of nothing but jungle, you know. I just spent the whole day on a deck watching the monkeys play around in them trees, man. It was like at a zoo. I'm telling you, it was, and you know, the exotic birds and it was all jungle. And, you know, for a good portion of the way. And I just... I just enjoyed that day. I happened to be off that day when we went through the canal, and I spent my whole day topside, and leaning over the railing, just watching everything. It was quite an experience.
So how long did it take for you to get through the canal?
I don't exactly remember. It just about took us all day, I guess.
Okay.
I don't remember. I swear I don't. I know we spent a good while going through that canal.
And then from the canal zone, you went to Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, Pearl. Yeah.
Okay. So had much of the damage from Pearl Harbor been repaired by the time you got there?
Pearl was in full swing by then. Yeah, it was quite a base by then. You still had the Arizona sitting out there. You know, they hadn't done anything with it, but
Still see it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what were your first thoughts when you saw it?
Well, I had seen pictures of it before and everything, you know, and I just I don't know. I guess it was just a hell of a thing, you know. Just you think about it, and you just I guess you knew that's why you were fighting this war.
So how long were you in Pearl Harbor?
I guess we stayed there about a week.
Okay.
I don't exactly remember. Let's see. I would say maybe 2 weeks. Yeah, we had liberty there and everything, so we stayed there a while. Probably, part of May till the end of, I'd say about 12, 15 days.
Okay. So you actually had an opportunity to see a fair amount of Pearl Harbor itself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Going ashore.
Yeah.
So what kind of things were there for you to do in Pearl Harbor?
Huh?
What kind of things were there for you to do in Pearl Harbor?
Not on the way going over, but on the way coming back, I had more time, and I visited, you know what I did? I visited one of the old pineapple plants, went up in the hills. I took a little train, me and a couple of other buddies, and we went and visited that old pineapple plant where they canned this pineapple, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we did that on the way. I was on the way back, coming back from after the war. But going over there, we mostly, I didn't do too much, just sightseeing around, you know, went to Waikiki Beach and made a few ballrooms that they didn't kick you out because you're underage. we didn't do too much. It was mostly sightseeing in Pearl itself, you know. But we had a nice time there. But after we left there, brother, that was it. Hey, we didn't, I think we stopped at Guam and, they gave us a day off at Guam, went and drink a beer and had a ball game, and he let us bring a few cases of beer aboard with us. A bunch of us went, and we had a good time. But after that, that was it. We didn't get any more liberty till after the war.
So what sort of things did the Navy have the Evans do when you were stationed in the Pacific?
Just a lot of patrolling, and we were on a picket line off Okinawa, and we escorting ships, and just always, you know, we were always on the go. We just moved from island to island, just mostly around Okinawa, you know.
Okay. So you were there for the battle for Okinawa, then?
Yeah, we were there. Yeah, we got there a little late, but they were still going on, and we...
So at any time did you have to man your station for general
orders? Oh, yeah,
orders?
Many times, yeah. Mostly at night, these planes would come over at night, you know. At that time, by the time we got there, the big raids had kind of slacked off. And what they were doing, they were just harassing you. They'd come over at night with one or two planes, you know, and they'd try to sink or destroy it, or sink or whatever they could get there, you know, whatever they held it. They wanted to die, so they were just... killing themselves, you know. You know, they would get on these damn suicide planes, and they didn't give a damn. They saw something like that, they'd just go right into it.
So you actually got to see some kamikazes then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Were there moments when you were at general quarters where you had to actually to fire upon any of these aircraft? Or
a couple of times at night, yeah.
That must have been interesting to try to fire on.
Well, we weren't firing the little guns because they wouldn't. The little guns wouldn't do any good, so they were firing the 5-inch guns. We were at general quarters, you know, and I was right under a 5-inch gun. That thing was right over my head. There's two barrels, and they would fire them at night a couple of times. One or two of those Japs would come over, and we'd fire at them, and. I don't know if we done any good, but one thing we would cut loose at them.
That must have made a terrific noise, being that close to the 5-inch gun.
Oh, you have to have earplugs. I always wore my earplugs. I'd be deaf today if I didn't. I was right under that on the fantail we had. It was 320 millimeters, and they were right under the 5-inch guns.
Well,
right next to it.
Well, the 20 millimeter guns alone must have made quite a bit of racket whenever you fired them.
Yeah, well, they were it was the smallest guns we had on there. We had the 40s, which were a little bit bigger, and the 20s were the smallest guns we had. Strictly an anti-aircraft gun.
Okay.
But like I said, those 5-inch guns, they were, it cut loose with those, man, and they. Those things made some noise.
So, out of the time that you were at general quarters, or that you were on top, were there any particular actions of bravery that stand out in your mind, or anything particularly stunned you or amazed you?
No, not really, no, sir.
Okay.
To be honest with you, no.
So when you saw those airplanes coming over at night.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't see them.
Oh, you did?
I just knew they were there, and the radar knew they were there, you know. And they'd fire from the radar, you know.
Okay.
You know, I didn't see them at night, but they would be firing, you know. They'd pick them up on radar, and they'd fire from the radar.
Okay. So, on board ship, what was your daily routine? What was an average day for you?
Well, like I say, every other day I had watch in the galley, so that kept us busy all day. And every now and then, most guys, they were painting and chipping and keeping the ship clean and ship shape and just cleaning and just, working on keeping the guns clean and just general work day. Okay. Every now and then we'd get out what they call a holiday routine, and they just let us all take it easy. Except the cooks. If you were on duty, you didn't have no holiday because you had to cook. Because the guys still had to eat, you know. But we'd have holiday routines every now and then when things weren't going too, when there was not too much to do. We had a pretty good skipper. He was pretty good at that.
Oh, who was your skipper?
Harry Smith.
Okay. And how often did
he was the spitting image of Hopalong Cassidy. He was, I swear. Yeah, I don't know if you remember Hopalong Cassidy. He's the old gray-headed, white-headed cowboy, And this guy, he just, the first time I looked at him, I said, man, look, I just thought that was Hopalong Cassidy. He was a spitting image of him.
I don't think anyone ever told him that to his face, though. I don't know.
I don't guess. But, boy, he just reminded me so much of him with his white hair and his big, tall stature. He's a big guy, He was a hell of a skipper. He was good.
So how often did Evans pull into port while you were aboard?
You what?
How often did Evans pull into port while you were aboard?
Well, we'd pull into Okinawa or Buckner Bay or one of those bays around there, and we'd stay a day or two and refuel and take on supplies, and we'd go back out on the picket line, We'd spend two or three days out on the picket line with two other destroyers, and we had maybe four or six Navy Corsairs over us, to protect us in the daytime, But
so you had a carrier nearby then?
No. Those Corsairs would work off the land.
Oh, okay.
We wouldn't be that far from the island. We were just the radar picket station was just a bunch of destroyers. I think there was three in a group, and we just patrolled around the island and pick you'd pick them up on a radar, and you'd alert the island that we're coming or something like that. And that's how that picket thing was. But after they established the radar on the island, I guess it wasn't too bad. But you know, when they first got there, those picket ships caught hell. You know, we were fortunate. We got there, like I said, we were fortunate. We got there when the heat of the battle was just about over, really. But there was still harassment. You know, they'd come that night and harass you and everything else. They sunk, in fact, that July the 29th, only a week before the war ended, a kamikaze sank the USS Callahan. They lost about 70-something guys or 60-something guys on it. And that was July the 29th. Hell, the war ended on the 15th, I think, or 15th or 14th or 15th of August, and that was just 2 weeks before. That was about the same time the Indianapolis got sunk off the Philippines.
Yes, indeed.
And the Callahan lost, and there was another ship beside the Callahan. I think the John Rawlings, R-A-W-L-I-N-S, I think they got hit at about the same time. I think the Rawlings got hit on the 28th, and the Cunningham got, not the Cunningham, the Callahan got hit on the 29th of July. But we did have, you know, we did have the distinction of picking up a couple of pilots. We saved a couple of pilots' lives.
Okay.
Their ships, their plane went down, you know, and we picked them up out the water, a couple of them. One was July the 4th, and I think one was July the 30th. We had picked up those two pilots. One of them, I think, I don't know what happened to him, but we picked him up the next morning, and one of them was the 4th of July. He was patrolling over us, and his plane went out of commission, so he had to beach it. I mean, he just landed in the water, and we picked him up, you know, brought him home. But like I said, we were fortunate. We got there towards the end of the war, and if we'd have been there a month earlier, we'd have been in trouble.
Well, that goes without saying. When you were aboard ship, then you'd mentioned that you had a fair amount of free time. What kind of things did you do for recreation when you were aboard ship?
We watched movies at night, indoors. You couldn't watch them outdoors because you couldn't have any light. Everything was in dark, you know. Everything was always lights out, no lights at all. And we'd watch them indoors, maybe in probably in a galley. We'd be watching movies. We'd get pretty good amount of movies, and we had a good buddy of mine from Carolina. He played music. He had a guitar. He'd play music for us, and we played little chords. Did a lot of sleeping, but all in all, it was pretty nice. It wasn't bad, you know.
So
we were fortunate.
So the movies that you were able to see, were these fairly new movies, or were these a little
older? I say new, I guess, like Casablanca and one with Bing Crosby, with the Nun. I forget the name of it, but we saw some pretty good, we had some pretty good movies. What they do, they exchange movies, you know, with other ships, and we got to see movies pretty regular. And after the war ended, we stayed out there quite a while. After the war ended, we were in the China area and up Nani, in the Yellow Sea, and up went up to Shanghai, Tsingtao, and those places. And we'd better look at movies topside, you know. They'd put the movie on a focal sort of ship, and we just sit topside and watch the movie then, because you had lights out. You didn't have a restriction on the lights. But it wasn't bad life aboard ship. We didn't get to go on liberty that much, you know, until after the war. And after the war, when we got in China, we got liberty every day. When we were in Shanghai, Tsingtao, went to Jinshan, Korea, went up to Dairen, Manchuria. We did a lot of traveling.
Well, you definitely got to see a good part of the world then.
You bet, I guarantee you. And we, like I say, after the war, we spent part of our time shooting up. We were shooting up mines. They laid a lot of mines out there during the war. I guess some of them were ours and some of them were theirs. I don't know, but we shot up quite a few mines. Uh, uh, just fact, we'd be looking for them all the time, and we'd run across them, and they'd shoot them with the 40 millimeters and the 20s, you know, blow them up. But that was after the war, naturally. But I tell you what, time passed pretty quick. It didn't linger.
So
I guess when we...
When you were aboard ship, did you get to listen to the radio very much?
Not very much, no. I didn't get to listen to the radio very much. We'd hear it now and then. Sometimes I'd go up to the radio room, and, you know, they'd have it on there. They'd have somebody have a radio in there, and they'd listen to it. But not very much, no.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have an opportunity to hear the infamous Tokyo Rose?
Sure did.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, and then, you know, that was after the war. During the war, right before the war ended, a few days before the war ended, they hit the USS Pennsylvania. You know, lost a few guys, a bunch of quartermasters got killed on that way they hit it, and they didn't say too much about it. But Tokyo Rose was up there bragging about that. You know, they knew they sort of knew. Looked like she knew. She got information pretty damn good. I know how she did it. But from what some of them guys tell me, they used to listen to her, and she knew, she kind of pretty much knew what the hell was going on. And, probably knew more than we knew. I don't know.
So overall, what were your living conditions like aboard ship?
Living conditions were good. They weren't bad. Like I said, we got 3 square meals a day. We had, you know, fresh water to bathe. Ship was pretty clean. We had a good life. We were fortunate that we didn't get busted up or anything. But we had a pretty good life as far as I'm concerned. I don't regret it. I enjoyed my 2 years in the Navy, and a little over 25 months, and then when I got back to the States after the war, I even enjoyed it more than that, you know. But it wasn't bad. I guess a lot of fellas had it a hell of a lot worse than we did, you know.
Oh, yes, well, especially as you had mentioned earlier about the Callahan being sunk
We were fortunate. We had just got off of picket duty that morning, and in fact, she believed us that morning. And we were in port that night, and we had to light up and go back and look for survivors, you know, which we didn't find any survivors. By the time we got there, they'd pick most of them up, I guess. But we did stay out there. Oh, that was a Saturday night, July the 29th, that Sunday morning. I was off duty that morning, so I stayed topside, and just all they were doing was dragging in debris from the Callahan, and pieces of life rafts and pieces of boat and just whatever was floating around the ship. They were picking some stuff up, but. We were fortunate. Well, we could have, it could have been us. You know, that's the way I look at it. Yeah, I think she took a hit for us. Because we were out there that morning and in that area where that was our picket station where she got hit. It could have been us, but we were fortunate. We had a lot of luck, I guess.
I would say so. So. When you were aboard ship, did you have any guys who were kind of wise guys who got into some tomfoolery or any kind of practical jokes or anything of that nature?
I guess we did. I was 365 men in there. We had some crazies, but they were they were young kids, and we were all a bunch of young kids, We had one of them, I'll never forget, he was a boy by the name of Barnes. We were in Portland, out in the bay, and that sucker dove off the yard on him, and that scared the living hell out of me. See, this guy, of course, he was like a fish in the water, and he dove off the yard on him with that ship, and I'll never forget that. I was standing up there watching that, and I couldn't believe that. But he dove off of that. Just stuff like that, you know. And we had all kind of it was just, we had all kind of people aboard that ship, and some of them were, some were a little rowdy, but most of them were pretty down to earth people, you know. We had a few young guys that were rowdy, but we didn't get in too much trouble.
Well, especially since, as you said, you didn't really have any liberties while you were at it.
Not during the war, no. Like I say, after the war, we had liberty. You know, every time we'd hit Tsing Tao, they'd let us go ashore. In Shanghai, we'd go ashore, and you know, sometimes we, in Shanghai, we'd get on these rickshaws, you know, and if we had a little bit too much to drink, sometimes we'd let the rickshaw driver get in the rickshaw, and we'd pull him, like that. But that actually happened. We pull in the damn rickshaw with the rickshaw drive in it. But we couldn't go very far, because those guys, they were trained to do that, you know. And them rickshaws, it wasn't easy to pull. But stuff like that. But we just, in Shanghai, we had a good time. We really did. Shanghai was quite a city, but it's nothing like it is today, I'm sure. But they didn't have too much then, with all the war going on and everything, and things were pretty scarce. Now and then we made friends with a couple of Chinese people over there, and we'd bring them something on shore, you know. We'd bring them a little bag of coffee or a pack of cigarettes or something, you know. Cigarettes were a nickel a pack in them days, and you could afford them. You weren't supposed to do it, but we'd sneak it ashore and bring it to these guys. But after the war we had a lot of fun on Liberty.
It sounds like you did.
Yeah.
So when you were aboard ship, did you write to your friends and relatives very often?
Oh yeah, I guess I wrote at least once a week probably. You know, especially to my family. You know, my friends I didn't write quite as often, but I'd write Mom, I guess, once a week. Sometimes I might go 10 days.
So
really, there wasn't too much to say, you know, and you couldn't say too much anyway when the war was on, because they used to check your mail over and made sure you didn't say too much. It was something you weren't supposed to say, you know. They'd read your mail and censor your mail, in other words.
Okay.
They didn't want you to, you know, they didn't want you to say where you were or nothing like that for some reason. I don't know
sure.
why.
Sure.
But no, we. Then we did have an experience of riding our two typhoons out there. We had that one. That was quite an experience, I guarantee you. Two typhoons. I don't think they were 3 weeks apart, and we rode out two of them. And one of them really hit Okinawa real bad. In fact, I got some mail I still didn't receive up to today. it wrote me a couple of letters and sent me some pictures, and I still haven't received them. And I know what happened, because the whole post office blew over, and tell me they had letters scattered all over the island of Okinawa. That's what they told us anyway.
Wow.
But we didn't, we wore those two out. We had to go to sea, get away from them, you know. But it was quite an experience. That was pretty scary.
I would think so. For one thing, you know, that's a far cry from going through a hurricane
yeah,
on the coast.
Bet, yeah.
And not only that, you were on ship as well.
Yeah, and that destroyer wasn't the biggest ship in the world, you know. In fact, we still talk about it tonight. When we're riding that destroyer, when we go to reunion, we talk about it tonight. It must have took about a 60-degree list, I guess. We were practically on a side, you know. You're just probably almost laying down in the water, and it just shuddered and sputtered and come back up and straightened out. And I think I was talking with this boy Higginbottom. That's a good friend of mine, was on the ship at the time. He told me, he said, "Dude," he said, "I was actually scared." He said, "I was scared to death." I said, "You know," I said, "I probably didn't have as much sense as you, because I don't remember being scared. But I said, I guarantee I should have been, you know." But being 18 years old, shit, I guess right now I couldn't go through that ordeal.
Especially with the two of them so close together.
Yeah. Oh, we were through two of them, damn thing. What they did, we went out to sea to avoid them, but you still got the, you know, you still got the, those things reach out for miles, and we still got you're batting everything down, man. You tie everything down, and you take off, and you get away from that sucker. But you can't get far enough. But I saw some of the destroyers that were batted up pretty good with, you know, with their Typhoon. Mm. But they just beat them to death.
I bet there are quite a few guys aboard ship who got pretty green during that time.
Oh, yeah. But, well, you know what happens. once you get used to that, it doesn't bother you, though. You know, once you get the rough weather, it doesn't bother you. It didn't bother you. The only time I got sick was when I was shakedown cruising off of Cape Hatteras. We were going to Cuba, and the weather was real rough off the Cape. And I guess the whole ship, all us rookers, that, you know, we all got sick. The only guy that didn't get sick and the guy that had been out to sea before. But, you know, after that, I never did get sick. And I had some rough weather. But I never did get sick after one time. And, boy, I was sick. Some of the guys, man, wanted you to throw them overboard. They were so sick. they were wishing they were dead. But it was, you couldn't get out your bunk. You were just, it was terrible. But after that, we all settled down, and I don't remember anybody getting sick. Except we had one kid that had what they call chronic seasickness, mm-hmm. and I still think up to today, in fact, I got a picture of that boy from Ohio. I still think up to today he shouldn't have been aboard the ship, because every time we'd get rough seas, he'd get shipped. And coming back after the war, coming back to the States between Hawaii and California, we got some real rough weather. And they had to feed him intravenously. We were going to lose him if they didn't. Because he was that sick, he couldn't hold anything on his stomach. And they always thought he was bluffing. You know, they thought he wanted to just get off the ship, and, you know. But he wasn't bluffing. That kid was just sick. He couldn't stand the sea. But all in all, it was quite an experience. Hell, it's over with. I guess I'm glad I went through it. It gives you something to be proud of.
Well, and between those two typhoons, you have some pretty good stories to tell.
You bet. Hey, you bet. I'm telling you. Hey, that was quite an experience, really. It was. You know, I think of that over here. We get these hurricanes down here like you people. And, well, not too much where you are up there in North Texas, but down along the water, you know. We get these hurricanes down here, and I think about that all the time. I say, man, are these over here? We in a house, you know, or in a shelter or something. With that ship, we we caught some hell, man. But we survived. We did all right.
Well, you came through it okay.
Oh, yeah, we had. That was a great ship we were on.
So for your time in the service, what kind of awards or citations did you receive?
Well, we got the... we got the Asiatic Pacific Campaign, you know, medal, and we got the with one star, one battle star for Okinawa. That's all, you know. And, you know, an American Theater and the Good Conduct Medal and stuff like that. But really, the only, you know, real award I consider is the, because anybody who's in the service got some of those, but they won. I consider the real award is the Okinawa battle. You know, we got a star for that. In other words, we saw enough action there where we were still in the battle, you know, and they gave us a battle star for that. That's it.
Oh, getting back to the Typhoon, during your training, did you receive any kind of training on how to deal with that rough weather?
Not that I recall, no, sir.
So that was one of those...
That was just one of the things that you learn on your own, I guess. Really, there's not too much you can, you know. I remember, man, when they said the Typhoon was coming, they're batting everything down. You had to tie everything down, you know, everything in the galley, everything on the top side, everything had to be tied. So for 2 days, we didn't cook. We couldn't cook, you know. We made a big old kettle of coffee, and they ate coffee and sandwiches. We made sandwiches for them. But you couldn't put your cup down, because if you did, your cup went through the air like a missile. Honestly, you couldn't, you know, you sat in the galley. I mean, in the wardrobe, you know, in the room, in the mess hall, you sat down, you couldn't put your cup down on the table. You better hold it in your hand. But it would, I promise you, that thing was rocking and rolling, and that thing go across that table like a missile, man. And that I recall very well. Drank a lot of coffee, and we ate a lot of sandwiches for 2 days. But everybody survived, what the hell.
So you were aboard ship then when the announcement came through that the war in the Pacific was over.
Yes, sir, we did. We had a party that night.
So what kind of things did you do for the party? I would guess that you cooked something special.
No, we got some torpedo juice.
Some torpedo juice?
Yeah, that's 190 proof alcohol. No kidding, this is it. We got the 190 proof alcohol. We had about six of us, not many of us, about six of us in the galley. Made a big old pot of lemonade with some, you know, at the time we didn't have lemons, but we had this powdered lemon stuff, you know. And we got some torpedo juice from the torpedo man. It used to come in 5 gallon drums. And we were in with those guys, and we got some of that, and we made a big old bunch of torpedo juice lemonade, you know. And we got drunk as skunks that night. I swear to God, if they'd have caught us, they'd probably put us all in a brig. Hey, honestly, it was the only thing I really screwed up on, I think. And really, we did throw a party when the war was ended. We had about six or eight of us. I remember Boy Roy Stevens from North Carolina, and I can't remember a couple of the cooks. And we had about six or eight of us, and ain't nobody knew we had this, man. And we just had a hell of a time. We just got drunk as skunks in it. We drank it. We drank every bit of it. We just knew the hell of war was over, and we were going to celebrate. And we did. I guess some others aboard ship celebrated too, you know. But this wasn't... This was just a few of us got together, and we happened to be able to get the stuff, and we did. What it is 190 proof alcohol that they use in the torpedo tubes, and we got hold of some of that. We also had the medical alcohol, the one that they had some in it. The sick bay you could get too, you know, but we didn't get hold of it. We didn't get none of that. But we had a good time. We had a good party that night.
So when did you get news of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
It was around the 15th of August, around that time. Before that, when he dropped the bomb, but the war didn't end, I think, till the 14th. We got news that the war ended around the 15th, I think. The same day it ended, we got the news.
Okay.
You know, and we all pretty much felt relieved. But then, like I said, we had to go through the... ordeal of that China thing, you know, going in these different ports and fighting these. I think that was the scariest thing of all. I'd go to bed at night sometime and get me punk and think about them damn. I was sleeping right about water level, and I'd think about them goddamn. Excuse the expression. Mines, you know, they had a lot of mines out there, and that was the scariest part for me of all. The war's over, and I might get killed by a damn mine, a floating mine. I thought about that. You know, you know, if you'd have got killed during the war, it's one thing, but the war is over, and you out there dodging mines, you know, all up and down the China coast, and there was a lot of them out there, and because we blew up a bunch of them, but that sort of kind of bothered me a little bit. That's about the only thing really worried me, I think.
Wow. Yeah, that would be an awful thing, you know, not just having the mine go off, but the fact that the war is over.
Yeah.
And something
like that. That's what bothered me. Hey, if I'd have got it during the war, I'd say, hey, this war, you know, you got it. But I just didn't want to get bumped off after the war. Really, I felt pretty. And when we left, I think March the 7th, we left the Okinawa area and come back to the States. We got home by April the 1st.
Okay. Well, you were probably on board ship then when, because you were on board ship in April of 45, weren't you?
Yeah,
Okay. So y'all received the news of Germany's surrender then?
Yeah, we were.
So did you think that...
We were right around Pearl Harbor, I think.
Okay. And I assume your reaction was pretty good to that as well.
Oh, you bet, man. We just knew, hey, we kind of figured, hey, look, this thing will come to an end now. You know?
You thought it was on the downhill slope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We all figured that, yeah. But we didn't know anything about the atomic bomb either.
Okay.
But, you know, we were getting ready. After we secured Okinawa, they were gathering all the ships together. It looked like they were planning on going to Japan, I reckon. Man, I've never seen so many battleships and aircraft carriers and cruisers and destroyers in all my life. Mm. They looked like they were gathering somewhere out there to go to, you know, to Japan, I reckon. And when the war ended, they were really getting, I think they were getting ready to invade Japan.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was in the plans.
Anyway. And when they dropped this bomb, well, we knew that was the end of it. We knew, you know, that was, hey, this is it.
Hmm.
But,
So it
finally came to an end, though.
And then you went cruising around China after the war was
over. Yeah, we went up to Iran, Manchuria, to look for some American, supposed to have been some American prisoners of war up there.
Mm-hmm.
But we never did find them. You know, we went ourselves in the USS Hubbard, which was the flagship of our squadron. It was another destroyer. And we went up there, but we never did, we didn't come back with any prisoners of war. Evidently, the Russians got to them first, or they killed them, or I don't know what the hell happened to them. But that was a long way up there, too. And, We didn't find anybody there. We had even got there. They even made a big old kettle of soup and stuff, you know. We said we're going to feed them good when they come back, you know, and give them some nourishing food and stuff when we get them aboard ship. But we never did get one. So I don't know what happened, because we had a crew from the ship went aboard, you know, some officers and men went aboard with guns and rifles and machine guns and stuff. They were going, supposed to pick them up. But they came back empty-handed, so I don't know what happened there. They never did find out.
Oh. So how much longer after the war were you on Evans?
I stayed on the Evans until June of 46.
And then you received word that you were going to be...
Discharged.
Discharged.
Yeah. I got discharged at the Naval Air Station in New Orleans. Lakefront Air Station, up in New Orleans, that's where I got discharged. Yeah.
Well, that's not bad. You actually went home to be discharged.
Yeah. They shipped us home. They shipped us to New Orleans, and those that were getting... Of course, I think I'm the only one aboard. No, we had a couple of other guys, but they had left earlier. They had been in the service before me. They were a little older than me, and one from Lafayette, Louisiana, and one from Homer.
So how did that happen? Did the ship pull into San Diego and then you took the train over? Or?
No, we pulled into Frisco.
Okay.
And then from Frisco, they went over to Oakland, went docked in Oakland. And I left out of Oakland and came home on leave, for 20 days. And I went back, had 40 days to finish off. And I got discharged 40 days later.
Really? Yeah. And then you finally got to spend your boot leave.
Yeah, I sure do. I never did. No, in fact, they owed me, let's see, I got 20, they owed me 60, so they owed me 40 days. They got to discharge me then, but they didn't. So I just spent 40 more days in there, and after the war, they sent me the money for my leave. In other words, for the days that they owed me, they paid me for it.
Well, you must have enjoyed that.
Yeah, you bet. I was always broke anyway. We spent all our money in there. But no, that was pretty nice.
Oh, did you ever send any of your money home?
Believe it or not, when I joined the Navy and I got in boot camp, I took a war bond, which was a war bond at that time, 1875, I think it was, during the war. And it was a $25 bond. You paid $18.75 for it. Okay.
Okay.
And I sent one home every month out of my paycheck. I'd put it on my mother's name, and she never did spend it. She just kept it. And hell, after she died, she'd always told the rest of the kids, "Look, this is Ned's money, you know." And she died in the '60s, and that's how long I kept those bonds, the late '60s. Well, even longer than that, I think, before I cashed them in.
Wow.
You know, they were due anyway because I bought them in the 40s. So they were 20-something years old, I think. And she kept them all, and she wouldn't spend them. You know, I told her, go ahead and use it. And, you know, she needed the money, go ahead and use it. It's hers, you know, but she wouldn't spend it.
Man, oh man. So then after you pulled into Oakland and then you took the train over
went to the train to L.A., yeah. Went down the coast to L.A. and then from there, you know, across the country to Texas, up into Louisiana. Hell, it took us 2 days to cross Texas. Man, y'all got a big state. Texas. That was a hell of a ride.
Probably thought you were going around in circles.
I'm telling you, man. But I enjoyed it. I was, you know, like I said, I'd never been away from home, so it was something, quite an experience, I guarantee you. And
so,
I don't regret it.
So when you made it back to Louisiana, did anyone meet you at the train station?
Well, no. I went to, they sent us right to the naval base, you see, and I spent 2 or 3 days there before the discharge. So I didn't tell anybody nothing. I just... I had a sister lived in New Orleans, well, in Metairie, right outside of New Orleans, you know, and I just got a bus there and walked down Canal Street in New Orleans, got a bus and went down to Metairie and announced that I was there. And from there, I caught a bus to Garyville, another bus. Used to come along the River Road, and then we ended up in Garyville, and I've been there ever since. I didn't go anywhere. Once a year, I go on my reunion. But I don't do too much traveling. I enjoy getting together with those guys once a year, though, you know, with CJ and Nicholson and all these guys. I enjoy getting together with them every year. They were in a different ward than us, but it's all the same, you know. That's the way I feel about it.
So how did you feel about your last day aboard Evans? When you realized...
I had mixed feelings. Really. I just, you know... Hated to leave. I started to re-up. You know, I really started to stay in the Navy. And but then Mom was getting old, and I said, you know, one thing, I ain't gonna do with that. I'm gonna go home. And, you know, but I was the last one left at home anyway. The other boy was out the Navy, and he had gotten on his own. And the others all had gotten married. So I said, you know, I'm not gonna leave Mama by herself. I'm gonna go back home. But I started to re-up, and then I didn't. And then. When I got to the naval station, they show you a gung-ho movie in the Navy and everything, and they want you to join the reserves, you know. So I told them, I said, I'd join the reserves. So I was going to join the reserves. I signed the papers for the reserves. And this is hard to believe. And but a day or so after being in, right at the naval station in New Orleans, I over the PA system, my name comes up, and it says to report to a certain building. And I'm thinking, what the hell's wrong with me? I said, Lord, I hope I don't have anything wrong with me. They ain't gonna be able to discharge me, you know. But and the guy, I go in and his officer sits me down. He said, look, he said, we can't accept you in the reserves. I said, what do you mean you can't accept me in the reserves? He says, your eyes are too bad. My eyes are too bad. Now listen to this now. I said, what do you mean my eyes are too bad? He said, well, your eyesight. He said, you got terrible eyesight, which I still have, bad eyesight. But he said, well, I said, man, I said, how can you tell me that? I just came off of a destroyer out of the Pacific. I've been in the Pacific out there since April of last year and all this. And I said, you telling me, or this year, I said, yeah, the year before. I said, you telling me I'm not fit for the Navy? He said, well, I'm sorry. He said, I can't accept you here. But he said, go to the custom house, room 308. And he says, after you get home, and they'll probably accept you. You know, this is what he tells me. So after I got home, I got to thinking about it. I said, you know, after having a good time at home and getting, I said, you know, one thing, I ain't joining anything. And I changed my mind. So they kept writing to me, wanting me to go. But after they turned me down now. So really, so I just never did go back and sign. But, you know, it's a good thing I didn't, because I'd have got caught up in that damn Korean War, because I was still a young man, you know. And I got married, and I'd have had a wife and 2 kids, and I'd have got caught up in the Korean War. Because a buddy of mine, Jack Van Pelt from Dallastown, Pennsylvania, he got caught up like that. He joined the reserves, and he had to go back in the service, you know. And I'd have got caught up, so I was sort of glad that I didn't join the reserves. In fact, not that I didn't turn, that it wouldn't accept me. But you want to hear a funny story before I close this thing up, before we close this up?
Sure.
When I went to join the Navy, listen to this, 17 years old. You tell this to people, they say, man, this guy's full of bull. Hey, I go in there and I pass the physical, all except one thing, my eyes. Okay, listen to this. Now, the same eyes that we didn't get, the guy tells me, he says, well, he didn't tell me anything. He had gone somewhere, and I'm sitting in the desk, I took in all my physical, you know. So I look at my little card he had on, my paper he had on his desk, and it says, in red ink, you got on there, recheck, R-E-G-E-C-T, recheck. And then I'm thinking, here I am, 17 years old, I'm fit as a fiddle, and he's telling me I'm reject. I says, man, I see you got me rejected. I said, what's the thing? He said, your eyes are bad. I says, my eyes are bad. I said, look, my eyes are not really that bad. I said, let me tell you the story about my eyes. I says, last month I had a bad case of poison ivy. I said, my eyes stayed shut for 3 days, which I didn't lie to him. It did. I caught poison ivy, cutting grass, and my face was swollen like a balloon, and my eyes were stayed shut for 3 days. And I told him, I even went to the doctor, got a shot or some medicine or something for the poison ivy. I said, look, if you want, I says, my eyes are not that bad. They're going to come back. I says, which I was lying. They were bad. And I says, if you want, I'll bring a paper from the doctor. And he said, well, you know, this doctor scratches out and rejects and accepts me. And I tell it to people at in. They say, man, you fool. I say, I'm telling you, the man, listen, took me, fell for my story. And my eyes were bad. You know, they were about, my vision was about 11/20 and maybe 14/20 or something like that. You know, it wasn't really that bad, but they were bad. So when I got in the Navy, they gave me glasses, but I never did wear them. And, you know, I still don't wear glasses. And I can read the paper and everything. It's just that my vision from a distance is not too good. But this guy was going to reject me, and I would have been some sick guy, some sick kid. I would have been a sick young kid. Because at that time, people wanted to go into service, you know. They thought it was their duty, and they wanted to go. And that's my story on that.
So did you collect any souvenirs when you were in the Navy?
I brought a few things home. I don't even have them anymore. I tell you what I did. My dentist, old Dr. Orr, he was an old dentist in Garibaldi, and he used to collect, these paper back, these little match, not boxes, they were match boxes and the little, you know, the little match boxes you carry in your pocket, the little folding match things, you know.
Oh, yeah, the match box.
He used to collect that. And I thought of him when I was in Shanghai, and I brought him two or three of those from Shanghai, China. And I brought back some Chinese money and stuff like that, you know. But I don't know whatever happened to that stuff. But Dr. Orr was, he was tickled to death when I brought him that. And he was about Denison in my neighbor. He lived three or four houses from me, you know, and I used to like the old man. He was up in age, and he's long gone now. But anyway, I brought him that, and he was strictly tickled to death I brought him that. But that's about the only souvenirs I brought back.
So,
could have brought back a rifle or two, but I just didn't bother with it. Some of these guys brought back a rifle. They picked up some rifles from, I don't know where they got those rifles from, had them aboard ship. They were Japanese rifles.
So how long after the war did you meet your wife?
Oh, I was going out with her when I left for the service.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. She and I were going out together.
Well, because where you grew up, and was she from Garyville?
She's from Reserve, where I worked. It's only, like, okay. I say, Reserve is about 5 miles from here, four miles.
So where did you meet her?
Huh?
So where did you meet her? Did you meet her at work or
at school?
Okay.
Yeah, we went to school together.
Oh, okay.
And we did work together a while. You're right. We did. We worked. She worked in a store where I did too.
Okay.
So we worked together at Altman's, yeah.
So you were high school sweethearts.
Yeah, okay. You can say that. Yeah. And then, like I said, we've been married since 49, 48. So we've been married quite a while now.
Okay. And did you write to her whenever you were aboard ship?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. We wrote to her regularly. We wrote back and forth, yeah.
So what kind of things did your family discuss in their letters? Did it kind of give you the news of around town and what was going on?
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah, just, you know, it's a funny thing. Mama couldn't write English. She could She could read English, but she couldn't write it. She could write in French. And I wasn't too good at reading French. I could read it, but I wasn't. So what she did, she used to get my neighbor's little girl, which was in high school at the time, to write me letters. She'd get, you know, she'd always have somebody write for her. You know, she'd tell them what to write, and they'd write it. But she couldn't write. Like I said, she could write a letter in French, because that's what she went to school in. She learned French. And she could sign her name, and she could read English. She could take a newspaper and read it. But she could not write in French, because she never learned to write in French. Isn't that amazing?
Mm. How great.
Well, she died in 65, and she was 78 or 79 years old when she died. So that's, you know, when she was coming up as a little girl, that's all they had down there was French people, you know. And that's what they taught them in school. But by the time we got to school, they were teaching English, you know.
Okay. So whenever you left the service and you returned home, you went back to work for the grocery store?
I took 1 month off. Okay. I took a month off. I said, I need a vacation. I took 30 days off. Then Mr. Altman, who I worked for when I left, called me up and asked me to go back to work for him, and I went back to work for him. And I worked there, like I said, 20-something, 21, 22 years, whatever. Same guy I worked through all high school for him, you know. So he needed somebody to work. So I stayed there with him and worked a long time. And
until that store closed.
Yeah, what happened is they closed the grocery department of it, and they went in the dry goods, you know, clothing store end of it. And I didn't want nothing but clothes. So I just, this guy opened a supermarket down the street, not too far from the store, and he brand new supermarket. He wanted somebody to run his butcher shop, so I went to work for him. And in fact, I left that Saturday. I left Saturday my job, and Monday morning I started the other job. I didn't miss a beat. Mm. And I work ever since. I've been working ever since. Still working. I figure I got about 20 more good years.
Oh, at least.
I'm only 77.
Oh, yeah.
I think I can go till 97.
Oh, you can go for quite a while. You can go as long as you want.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't make it quite that long. But I still work every day. In fact, I just left the store when I come here to answer the phone. I hadn't been here 5 minutes.
Well, I'm glad I caught you.
Yeah, well, no, I was there in an appointment. One thing about me, I make an appointment, I'm there. I'm very precise about that. I don't, you know, if I say I'll be there at 9 o'clock, I'm going to be there at 9. I won't be 5 minutes late. I may be 5 minutes early, but I won't be 5 minutes late. That's the way I've always been.
Well, do you have any other things you'd like to talk about, or anything else you have a comment on?
Not really. I guess I might have talked a little bit too much this morning.
Oh no, just fine.
I'm sure when I hang this phone up and I go to thinking about it, something I should have said probably. But you know how that is. That's been a long time ago, you know.
Absolutely.
That's you talking about what 50 something years? Let's see, 1940. But out in 46, that's 54, and we'd be 50. That's about 57 years ago. That's
well,
a long ways back.
But like you
that's
said,
almost as old as you, aren't you?
Well, I'm only 29.
You're kidding. You're kidding.
No.
Huh?
No, I'm not kidding.
You're only 29?
That's it.
Well, that'd be damn. That's great. You got a long life ahead of you, I hope. Hopefully.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, you're going to be all right.
Well, you'd mentioned earlier that you had mixed feelings when you received your notice that you were going to leave the Evans. It had been your home for quite a while then, and you grew an attachment to it.
That's correct.
So when did you find out about the collision between Evans and Melbourne?
I had about 10 kids in my car. I was coaching Little League Baseball, and we were going, leaving Garrable to go to reserve to play a ball game. I guess it was about 5:30, 6 o'clock at that afternoon, and it came over. I had my radio on an automobile, and that came over. And
hello?
And that just knocked the hell out of me.
It must have. Did you pull off to the side of the road or?
No, I kept driving, but I just couldn't get over it.
And I bet you thought about it for the rest of that day.
Yeah, I still think about it. Man, it's...
Because there were a lot of good men who went down.
You bet. That's what hurts, you know, really. See all these young guys go down with that ship. And I have a lot of compassion for the lady that lost her three sons. Did you ever meet Mrs. Sage?
No, I don't believe that I have.
Fine old lady. She lost her three sons on that thing, man.
That alone has to be a terrible blow for any parent to take. I mean,
yeah, you bet. You know, she didn't come to the last reunion. In fact, I don't think she made the last two reunions. But she's been coming regular, and she holds up pretty good. That's got to be terrible.
Well, it's bad enough to lose one child, but to lose...
Yeah, lose three. Just think of that. You know,
day.
Like 18, 19, and 21 years old or something like that. Or 19, 20, 21, or 22. It's just hard to believe that. You gotta feel for them, you know. And then plus all the other families. I met quite a few of the parents of the other kids, you know, that got lost, you know. It makes you feel terrible. It does.
And it was a good ship and a good crew.
You bet.
Well, Mr. Dew, I thank you for your time this morning, and I thank you for talking about your time in the Navy and your thoughts about the Navy.
Okay, Jack, it has been a pleasure, I guarantee you.
Well, and I've enjoyed it immensely on my side as well.
Okay.
And I thank you for your time.
You bet. Okay, look, and I wish you all the success in the world.
Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Bye.
Bye.